You're listening to an FX PhD podcast from fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to this week's FX PhDOD. I'm John Montgomery. Thanks for joining us. And Mike, how's it going today, my friend?
I'm good. I'm really good. I was a little exhausted yesterday, I have to say, because we were shooting on Tuesday, but today I feel renewed.
I have actually not spoken with you in person or whatever, in voice, since the shoot. How'd it go, man?
It was great. I just put a little thing on the Dean's blog about it.
I saw that.
Yeah, so, I guess the thing that was interesting for me is it was primarily, I guess, 50% for the DOP course. So we did some really interesting stuff, stuff that I was keen to do, but stuff that's not in my comfort zone of like, yeah, I can totally nail that right out of the gate. Everything's easy peasy. So, for example, we were discussing stuff to do with coverage, right? And a good point of view on this is my point of view of I normally just, roll my eyes and, kind of whatever when I hear actors talking about motivation, because it's almost like so cliched as to be, I'm like, yeah, actors, yeah. Except for the fact that what we were talking about was what – motivation for the shots, if that makes sense. Like we were talking about somebody moving because there's a motivated reason to move, somebody doing something because there's a reason for doing it. So it wasn't an aesthetic thing about, all the sort of inner actor trying to find their inner, baby voice. It was stuff right. Like, well, why are we doing this way? And is there a reason for it? And does it sort of play out in a logical sense? And to that, we had two other concepts, which is, the point of view of the shot, which I had to keep on checking myself, wasn't a POV shot. It was whose point of view is this story being told at this point? Mm-hmm. And then finally, what is the subtext that we're trying to communicate? Like, what is it? Is there a way that we can film between the lines? And this is really interesting for me because the project that we shot recently that we've just been editing, it's in background, was the tourist thing. Now, the tourist thing was a gag, right? It was like, A, B, A, B, A, B. We're heading in a certain direction, cut across it with our expectations, and it's hopefully funny, right?
Right, right.
But you're not filming subtext on a gag. You're not, there's subtext going on. And
there
you
is,
are,
but that's not, right, the main.
Yeah, it's in a big dramatic scene that yep. You can really play it. And so there were things like we were filming the listening, not filming the dialogue. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's so easy just to go, as in fact we showed, here's a wide shot, now cut in for the close-ups, now cut in for the reverses, okay, we're done. And, as I jokingly said, that gives you the days of our lives. And while there's nothing wrong with the days of our lives, actually there is, there's a lot of the days of our lives.
What's wrong with days of our lives.
And so, so we were trying to do the, and it was really funny because when we were setting up for the days of our lives shot, everyone was like really wooden and like really, stupid. And I'm like, no, I don't want stupid. I don't want ridiculously dumb. The audience that's watching this is very intelligent. I want a plausible wide shot and cut in for two close-ups. I want, something that doesn't look stupid. We're not going to artificially make it bad. We're just going to limit ourselves by not being, exploring some of these other aspects.
Right.
And everyone was like, well, that was – and the director, who is also an actress Alex Davies, she's just brilliant, by the way, just totally phenomenal. She was just shooting on Australia with Hugh Jackman and Nicole Kidman and stuff. Mm-hmm. So she's an actress. She's also a director. And she was like, well, at the end of the Days of Our Lives version, she was like, well, actually, that was pretty plausible. That was, the actors really rose to the occasion and their performances kind of actually worked. And I'm like, yeah, we're not saying it doesn't work that way. We're just saying how much better can you get it? And to make the challenge hard, we wanted the first round, not to be artificially stupid. We don't have people standing there like they're like, no one would ever shoot that kind of thing.
Right.
What I
mean? Yep.
And so the second version actually I think is brilliant. I think it's just exactly what you want. It's acting. It's all the things you don't normally get time for in a commercial, dialogue delivered, but we're watching the listening. We're filming it from interesting camera angles. We're moving the camera for a reason. When it goes handheld on one bit, it's because, the character is unsure. And so when you start moving right. The camera, you add to their sense of insecurity. And there's like a whole lot of things we started doing. And so for a sense, like if ever I've been on a set that sort of filming has been done, I was way out of it, right? Like it's non-effects work. And they're acting, right? They're like seriously acting. And so you just give them as much room as you possibly can out of respect to the craft. So it was funny for me to have this serious acting and then me sticking my stupid head in the middle of it.
And going.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, that's a good point also as well about the difference also between TV commercials, because it really is different as well in that. Different motivation for what you're doing actually, though. Having worked on like dramatic pieces or even, you know, TV episodic drama stuff that I've been on set with them versus TV commercials. Totally different.
Yeah, and we're doing some stuff on lighting for drama, and that's exactly the point you've hit on the nail on the head there, John, that we show like, well, this is the lighting for the, you know, for the TV commercial, and it stands up to 2 feet left and right. That's it, you know what I mean? Everything has to be exactly where it is. It's totally framed to the camera.
Right.
You know, there's no room for any deviation. There's 2 feet that this shot works in, and that's it. Versus the drama, right, where, you know, you've got almost a 360. I think in our case, it's like more like about 180 to 270 degree kind of area that we're shooting around in a bigger space with actors moving. And we're considering all sorts of things like crossing the line in terms of how do you do crossing the line. I mean, everyone knows crossing the line, right? You'd expect people in PhD to know crossing the line. But what I'm talking about is crossing the line with three actors.
Right.
You know, where's that darn line when there are three of them?
Yes.
And, you know, so it was good stuff, I think. It was good.
That's interesting. I'm curious. I wonder, too, if I'd be curious and just, I don't know, if in conversation with her and speaking with Alex, I mean, his and being a director versus DOP, but how I often think, too, on how the electronic age also has changed in setting that up in lighting. I'm not sure if it's the reason I say that, and I think we talked a couple of weeks ago about some of the new lighting and so forth and some of the dramatic series on television. They look much more refined in the last year to me than they have in the past. And I'm not sure if that's because I'm looking at it in HD and I'm seeing all these nuances I haven't seen before, or whether in fact it's some of the technology on set that enables them to be a little bit more comfortable, because, you know, a good DOP, they're going to get to end up with something that looks brilliant even without seeing it on set.
Yeah, let me tell you a couple of funny stories about that. Actually, firstly, on set, they were commenting on that. They were saying that, do you remember a show Heart to Heart?
No, that's why I'm laughing. Yes, Heart to Heart. Yes, okay, I do. Heart to Heart.
So on that, when they shot an episode in Australia, because at one point the Hearts come down under for their Aussie experience, they actually stuck a light on the camera, right, to keep film on the actors' faces, no matter which way they were to camera.
And right.
Everyone on set was just laughing about that. The other thing I was going to say, and sort of mega name drop, but when I was at the 50th Australian Cinematographers Society function, we were talking with Dean Semler, who, you know, shot Apocalypto and Dances with Wolves, and brilliant films, and Andrew Lesney, who, you know, Lord of the Rings and I Am Legend and King Kong and just a ton of stuff. Anyway, I asked them, you know, we're just standing out on the balcony, not smoking. I said, we were, you know, about digital cinematography, and I asked them about it in terms of the acting, because that's not normally discussed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Andrew really surprised me, because I was kind of expecting my comment to be not a, you know, ridiculous comment. I expected him to, you know, sort of think, oh, yeah, that was, you know, a reasonable thing to say. But he jumped on it in the positive sense. He jumped on it. It was like, this is the number one reason why you'd want to shoot digital, is so that you don't interrupt the actors' performances and you can have really long takes and you don't have to do reloads and you can work with a much less intrusive working environment. And for him, that was like the number one benefit of going to digital. And I thought that was really interesting that, you know, it is just so much that what these guys are doing is telling the story. And Andrew just was complete education. We've actually got Andrew on camera doing a whole lot of stuff, which is going to go into an upcoming class.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it was like a complete education for me in how he just – built out from the actors thinking about their characters and the directors thinking about what the subtext was, all the way out to what lens to use. You know, it was like a direct line. Like normally you expect someone to say that as a kind of,
right, exactly.
Well, obviously once we understand the thing, then I can frame it. But I was, you know, coming from the school of, I mean, the way I describe it is if you're coming in as an effects guy, right, you're used to one shot, 28 layers. And
right.
If you're coming at it from a cinematography point of view, it's, you know, 28 shots, and oh, some of them may have some layers. And so it's a good mind jump for me to really get my head into the space of, you know what, let's just forget about how this gets constructed technically and just think about why I would, you know, because I'm so into the cool shot, because quite often the cool shot is the effect shot and that's the shot I'm on. And I spent all my life trying to get, you know, 73 frames looking magnificent, but I don't really stop to consider how 73 frames cuts with the next 73 frames or the 73 frames that came before it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, that's fascinating too. And that's not like a wasteful aspect of running off footage on set, you know, it's just in a way of making it easier and more comfortable for the actors and so forth. Because you do have that thing with digital, right, where people are just, you know, shamelessly bad and sloppy with filming stuff they don't need.
And to that end, you're right. It is true. But by the same token, think about it this. If you were standing around with 20 people watching you, I mean literally staring at you, and maybe it's 40 or 50, and we want you to cry, literally cry, and you're halfway into like this dramatic scene, and then someone goes, you know, yeah, exactly. And then immediately what then happens on the reload is people come flying in, right?
Totally.
Like hair and makeup comes flying in, continuity comes flying in, there's a tape measure in your face checking how far your nose is away.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of more discussion in the room, and then they all settle down. They go, okay, now can you just pick it up from where you were crying? And it's like... You know, and I mean, it's not until you actually get in front of a camera that you actually, you know what, this is incredibly intimidating. So while, yes, there are actors who are obviously more like models, we're not talking about them. We're talking about real actors who we have a lot of respect for. And that is just hard. I mean, that is, it is, you're kind of exposing yourself. And there's a real sense of like, you know how you like don't want to be the guy that walks into a room that you've no one you know and be embarrassed.
Yeah.
Like, times that by 100 for like sitting on set and kind of doing a dramatic piece and just not having somebody, you know, feel literally self-conscious. And so I just totally respect the work that Alex was doing. I mean, obviously Ben Allen was great. I mean,
right.
Because we set him the challenge of having a, you know, not too bad scene to start with. I mean, it was not like the Days of Our Lives thing was as appalling as Days of Our Lives. It wasn't, you know, horrendously stupid. It wasn't comically done badly, though that would have been very easy. Actually, it's interesting you mentioned that about, you know, kind of the whole idea of playing it for gags. Because I was talking about this with Jeff earlier this morning, because we were talking about a review I was doing of Speed Racer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on the VFX show, and it was this whole idea about being a smartass. And he was saying how glad he was in listening to that, because he was you know, listening to it in a block, that we weren't just smartasses in carrying on about the film. And I think that brings up a really important point, and we have to be very conscious of it. I know you're very good about it, John, which is this whole idea that we kind of serve at the pleasure of the audience. Like, we do this podcast for the people that are listening. Like, we are trying to talk to you, the listeners, and tell you about some of the things that we've learned and some of the things that are going on in PhD and build a sense of community. But it's, you know, we exist and are only given this luxury of being able to do this because you guys are listening. And, you know, we don't take that for granted. And I think it's really easy to go into kind of rat holes and in jokes and just being a smartass. And I think in a way, John, it's kind of rude. It's almost like you're being impolite to waste their time.
I agree. And we try to air. And I mean, we do get a little bit occasionally, right, trying to have some fun. But there's a, you know, there is a fine line between that. And I think you can really quickly go over that line. And I'll be honest, actually, our audience members let us know when we do that, actually, as well. But that's turned me off in podcasts before. As well, it's just like, you know what, enough of that, you know, I'm done with that. And our DODs are a little different, or obviously way different, I should say, than the FX guide ones, right? You know, that's, they're a little more familiar and so forth as well. But I agree
with
you.
The FX guide ones, the story is not about us. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, that's the point. The point of the story of the FX guide is whoever we're talking to. And I hope we don't do that thing of wanting to just tell the interviewee how clever we are. You know what I mean? That thing where interviewers go, I'm going to show you how clever I am by asking the most incredibly long-winded question just to show you that I'm really clever. Because, you know, they don't want to hear from us in an FX guide interview. Now, I think in PhD, they do want to hear from us, right?
It's it's a little different. It's a little bit different thing. And you could still get off. I mean, we've gotten off on tangents before. But, yeah, it's a different audience and different expectations as well. And, yeah, that's a good one, too. And I think it's also the thing about the VFX show, too, that you're talking about and being kind of snarky or smartass or whatever. It just doesn't serve anyone to do that, you know? I get frustrated listening.
As a comedy routine, you know what I mean? If we're presenting ourselves as a comedy routine that you're listening in for a... You know, I mean, you kind of know what you're getting. Like, I don't expect a really big, in-depth interview from anything on Comedy Central. And yet when Jon Stewart does something that's a bit more thought-provoking, my expectations are exceeded, and I really respond to that, and I think it's brilliant. But I don't know, I think that, you know, if you're tuning into us or the VFX show or, you know, any of our podcasts like Red Center or whatever, you're kind of, you know, doing it because you want to be informed, and we're being paid, but we're not being paid to be a comedian. You're paid to be informative.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, that's not a line that humor is out of line or anything by that standpoint. You know, that's fine at all, but it's just this, I don't know. This, again, it's a line that I guess I know it if I run into it, or I know it listening back to the podcast. I know both of us at least occasionally listen back to these podcasts and see whether, we can do things better, whether it was too much of a rat hole that we got into or whatever. But again, I've tuned out on podcasts and tuned out of stuff just because there's way too much of that. You know, it's just like, I don't need to hear that. Enough with the in-jokes and so forth. So, though that being said, there are a couple of little in-jokes as part of the update this week that a couple of people have pinged me about.
But I mean, I think, and I'll tell you, you know, obviously the one example that we just totally flag is This American Life, right?
Yeah.
A superb piece of podcasting. You're never in any doubt that the most important person that Ira Glass is talking to when he's talking is you listening in the car as you're driving on the other side of the planet. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, 100%.
Ira's not doing it for Ira's benefit. He's not doing it for his mum's or his mate's benefit. He's not doing it for wisecracks about how clever, witty a turn of phrase he is at the expense of somebody that they're interviewing. And
I would say,
you know, we should.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't want to pump your, you know, head so it explodes too much, but I mean, another one, you know, Charlie Rose.
I don't appreciate my head didn't explode either.
But you know, Charlie Rose, have you seen interviews by Charlie Rose here in the States?
I have only seen a little bit of them.
I mean, I think this is where the head explodes part, but I mean, I equate the stuff that you do for the Effects Guide podcast and the kind of research and knowledge that Charlie Rose shows in interviewing people as well, the kind of research and hardcore research that you do when you're talking to someone, because it becomes so quickly obvious when you're talking to someone that you really have no idea what they do. I mean, I'm sure you've seen interviews on TV where it's obvious that whoever's interviewing just has no clue about what the talent has done.
Now, just to clarify that, the way you said that was, it's really obvious when I'm interviewing someone that I don't know what I'm talking about. But I think you mean if somebody doesn't know what they're talking about, right?
If someone, yes. Yeah, not you. My point was that you are the Charlie Rose of the effects industry kind of podcast from that standpoint. Not the exact opposite of someone who might be on Extra or Entertainment Tonight or something like that. So,
yeah. Look, it's genuinely easy to do if you're interested in the subject. But I think the other thing is, and it's hard, it's certainly hard if you haven't done it a lot, is you need to be thinking about the next question, but you actually need to listen to what they're saying. And I think the biggest sin, certainly I've tried to avoid it with the FX podcast, is we're talking to somebody and they throw in something from left to field, like, yeah, and that was really good. And then we shot that on the IMAX camera as well, just to have some extra plate. And then you're into your next question. So now tell me, how many days did you have on the job? It's like, wait a second, back up, dude. Didn't he just say he shot with an IMAX camera? Like, you know what I mean? And of course, you've got your notes in front of you and you're all ready for the next question, which is cleverly going to, you know, dovetail into this other point you want to make. So it's sort of like you've got a script, but you've got to throw it out the window when you're actually talking to someone, because depending on what they say. And the other one that I really try and avoid.
God, I'm glad the election's over, by the way.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm glad it's over too.
Sorry, what were you going to say? My lame attempt at humor.
Is that okay? Huh? Okay.
But this would be explaining your points, I think, is the point
right.
I was trying
to
make.
Right. Oh, I've got you. I'm sorry. You're illustrating the yes. Okay. And the other point I was going to make was just and this one is easy to fall into, but it's was on a U2 album or a U2 something. I can't remember what it was, but I heard that this guy goes to U2, right? So you've finished the album, you've toured, of course, then you've gone into the studio, done the new album and toured with it, which has been a successful tour, probably the most, you know, successful tour you've had, and certainly got back to your roots in terms of a great rock format. And so now that's finished, you must be tired. And the guys just go, yeah. Because, you know, I mean, like the interviewer, like, A, it gave him a yes or no answer, and B, they just, you know, gave the answer in the question. The band were like, yep, that's pretty much right.
Yeah, that is a pitfall.
Need me to be here.
Yes.
So, yeah. It's funny when you hear it, though. I'm sure in the case of you two, they're obviously so media savvy that they were just bitch slapping the guy down to kind of say hello.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, then it's other interesting. I don't know if you've ever been. Have you ever kind of one of those big giant press junkets for where they, you know, effectively bring a star in and every TV station gets their 10 minutes with them? Where they're just answering the same thing over and over and over again. It's really quite a sight to see.
And I went for one for the technical press once, which was hysterically funny because nobody was asking any technical questions. And I knew one of the guys who was being interviewed, right? He's an old friend of ours. I won't say who it was to identify them, but you know them very well as well, John. So they like completely knew who I was. And so there was just this big pause because they'd done the whole, so what was it like to work with the director question, which, you know, for a technical session just seemed really odd to me. And there's this big pause. I said, well, if no one else is going to ask any technical questions, I was. And I just laid in this really complicated question about OpenEXR and how things worked. And it was almost like half the panel was just like, who is this guy? And the other half was, finally, I can talk about something, right? Because and, of course, the guy we knew just broke up laughing. And he's like, ladies and gentlemen, Mike Seymour.
I think we told you about that one, too, and maybe even talked about it in a podcast ways ago when we went on a press thing, different from what I was talking about, but been a press thing for an animated feature. And we went around to each department and met with, you know, the animation department and the set designer and everything like that. And so we go to the animation, you know, the head of animation, and the people are asking questions. So what was it like to work with, you know, Mike Myers or whatever? And I'm kind of like, and you can tell that these guys have obviously, this is not the only press group who's been through, right? You know, so they're, even the people who do our jobs, like the lead animator or whatever, are still averse to that and very kind. And so then my like, so what was it like? Do you rig it with inverse kinematics? What kind of thing? And he's like, huh? And you could see like, kind of did double take, like, oh, yeah, well, that's good. So that was pretty interesting. So it's an interesting process, I guess. Good stuff.
Hey, chatting around PhD.
Yes.
We're about to shut down on enrollments for the...
Yeah, enrollments will be closed. We're in week 7 now, so they'll close early next week, enrollments for the current term, which is probably good because what we do is we don't like people joining so late in the term that they have to struggle to catch up with courses, you know, they run out of the VPN, don't have the kind of interaction with other postgrads or professors who are out there. So we actually don't want their money because we don't want people to, again, we don't want people to have a bad experience when they join, similar to heeding our warnings about taking too many courses. sorry, but we're not going to take your money. We don't keep it. We're not going to do that. We'll close out registration for this and effectively in preparation. Also, we can do some stuff and do some behind the scenes stuff, under the hood stuff between now and June 30th, which is when we'll be announcing our new courses. As I've become our tradition, the tradition is to announce our stuff the Monday of the break week between, I guess it's effectively what the break week of this term. But again, it would be effectively week 11 classes where they would be. So that's when we'll announce all our new stuff. Because we're working, as we talked about, I think last week, the week before, this is the point when we really start nailing down the courses that we're going to be having next term. This is a struggle this time.
Are we allowed to leak one this time? We'll leak
you
one
know what?
The
do
end.
What you want. You know what I'm like about leaking. You know, I don't, you know.
You don't like leaking. You're a non-leaker.
You know, maybe I think next week, you know, 3 weeks of leaks. But I'm fine with it. If you feel strong, I'm good. You know, there's no harm really. Me too, actually. I was thinking about that today.
Let me talk about something else for a sec. Question to you. Challenge 3. We wanted to have, I said to everybody in the class, we wanted to have a unique place for them to upload that stuff so that it wasn't just spread throughout the forums like I got with challenge 1, which is, you know, great point from you. Do we know, can we post in the next sort of short while how they post for challenge 3?
Did you mention that in your background class? Yeah, I saw it. We saw the files go out there. I'll do that. Do you want to do a forum post? I'll do that, yeah. I'll do that, actually.
Yeah, because I saw that somebody's already posted in the forums. You know, it's funny, everyone puts in, I'm never quite sure if somebody's surname is their login name or they just think it's a really good anagram on something. But Sephram has just posted asking where they post that. And I'm really keen to see those results because I don't know if you saw challenge 3, which is the Angie tattoo challenge. But
yeah, I did.
It's only 30, it's only 34 frames because we want to keep the data low and the quality high. But in a commercial, that's pretty much all you'd get, I reckon.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and the other frame is a little bit longer, right? But
oh, you know, the other frame is obviously the lead in and out or time whatever. To appreciate yeah. what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we sent those out today and already done. That's impressive because that was like that went live like 5 hours ago.
Yep, and they said they got it and they've been working since it went live.
Wow, fantastic. Yes, so we'll post that in the forums.
In
probably
Denmark,
should actually in the future I'll get, you know what I'm going to do is this is totally behind the scenes talk, but I'll get you a list of FTP logins to have that you can just have in your disposal so you can record those into the classes in the future too as well. So,
right.
Not that forum post is probably a good place to put it, but
yep, so I'll put that in the background forum post, and then we might put it in this week's or next week's email thingy.
Yes, definitely. I will do that.
End of term, we're also going to have a second. So there's going to be two of them, the one for this class, Challenge 3, and then Challenge 4, which is in fact a redo of the previous ones. The point that was raised by people, and we're going to test to see if this works, is, well, you gave me some great feedback. I've now improved it. I'd like to resubmit my work to get it, you know, a second bite at the cherry because – you know, it's all very well getting the feedback, but if you don't see how I took the feedback or whether I've made any subsequent, you know, I've learnt from it effectively.
I thought that was a really interesting idea, I thought. And I thought it was good.
Let's see how it plays out.
And I also think, and I said this in the forums, I mean, I think the idea, and it was actually, I think your idea of trying to integrate the challenges and background fundamentals is a good idea because we've been struggling in trying to get more participation in them. You know, I think it's really easy because we're all in remote locations to not take part in the challenges. I think the fact that everyone's in background fundamentals, you know, everyone's taking that class, everyone's watching it every week, as well as the fact that you're kind of covering some of that stuff in the class, I think is really helpful in trying to spur involvement in getting people to do it. Because I think the ability to get feedback from turning stuff in is one of the great aspects about FXPhD. And it's really nice to see more people taking advantage of that because we know time's tight. And that was the other thing about the idea of refining it. I think that's nice that you don't have to build something from scratch because it's obvious that several, if not most of the people spend a tremendous amount of time prepping their submissions.
And we had one resubmission already, which I just commented on in the forum. Not that I'm going to do that, but you know what it's like. I'm a sucker for somebody asking a question. And, you know, we suggested, I think, two simple things to just fix their shot, which they did. And it just went from like, yeah, not so much to, yeah, that's a good effort. That's looking good. And, you know, when you say them sometimes, it's, and you're the person hearing, you go, oh my God, that's so obvious. Why couldn't I see that, right? So the example I'm using is that I gave some feedback on a sky that had effectively no perspective in it, right?
Right.
So it's good comp, just, you know, the cloud should be smaller in the distance. As soon as I said it, I'm sure the person that got that feedback was like, oh, of course. You know what I mean? And so it's nice to get a chance to come back from that and not just say, well, I buggered it and there you go. But to say, yeah, well, I'm going to, you know.
That in the big blue light, which was a common thing that I'm not sure if that was like part of the set or something like that. But in a lot of the entries had the light left in.
Yes.
On the lights, it's like, yeah, okay. But I was really impressed with the depth of some of the stuff that people added to it. I mean, some, like I said, it's obvious that some of them just spent an extraordinary amount of time. And I like
the
idea.
The car one worked really well. The car, you know, because that had perspective, color correction, and...
And the thing I like about that, though, is it runs the mix, right? You've got a motion shot with a lot of keying and layering or sequence, which is a lot of work. And then the ability of taking and doing a still... is a little easier, right? A little less time intensive. So,
I think you learn from it because it's
100%. Same concepts apply.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it could have been a moving shot and it would have just taken it longer.
Yeah, you know, stuff like that. You go, oh, yeah.
So
okay.
I think people were a bit cranky having Easter eggs in there that I had hidden roto already done for you if you just bothered checking the paths. We didn't leave it in the channels because we thought that would be too obvious, but we left it in the paths.
Yes, very nice.
And people going, oh, you, because it's sort of the worst thing is, right? You go, no, that wasn't in my shot. And then you go look at it and you go, oh my God, it was. I worked on that for ages. I never knew that was all there.
That's too funny.
That's my sixth sense of humor. I got something interesting to tell you. I don't think I have told you this already.
What's that?
You know, I'm going to China.
I do know you're going to China, yes.
Yes. So I'm going to China. Now, this is, I, this is going to break my own rule because it's a bit in-jokey, but I'll tell you what the in-joke is when we get to it. So I'm going to China. I'm turning up on the Friday, starting lecturing on the Monday. So I have to do that because there's no flight that lands on Sunday or Saturday, right, and I need to be ready to go first thing Monday morning. Only other option is to come in Monday morning. So I'm stuck with a weekend in Beijing. Now, there are a lot of worse things in the world than being stuck in Beijing. And, of course, Jimmy's going up, and Jimmy speaks, obviously, having been born there, can get me around perfectly well. So there's no problem with doing that, and we're happy to do it. So Jimmy and I are sitting around, and we're like, hey, what can we do over the weekend? Because we want to shoot some stuff, and we – you know, facing the classic problem you have about, you know, how to shoot stuff in a country where you don't have necessarily the money or the time to get all the permissions, and it's a communist, centrally controlled country, and that's presumably a little harder than it is in, you know, downtown Sydney. So to add to all of that, the Olympic Games are coming up, right? So security has been tightened through the roof. So now we have tightened security. And we're like, well, what are we going to do? And, you know, we just, you know, I guess we could just go out. And I have no interest in just going shopping, right? Because, like, the reason to be there is to work. And so, you know what we've settled on?
What's that?
We're going to get picked up on Saturday morning, and we're going to go out and do some photography at a location which we're allowed to photograph at. And then we're going to the Great Wall of China, where we're going to sleep on the wall, a la Survivor.
Sleep on the wall, a la Survivor. Nice.
Did you see the ep of Survivor where they went to the Great Wall of China?
Yes.
Okay, so the actual guy that was in the shot serving them dinner is the guy that organizes this, and we got onto him.
Oh, nice. That's well done.
And that's a bit of an in-joke because John and I are big Survivor fans.
Yes, yes. That's my guilty pleasure of reality TV. Well, one of my guilty pleasures. The other hint of my guilty pleasure may be the last name of our podcast, Over at FX
Guide. You're so fierce. So anyway, yes, but
hang on, how cool
would that be, right? Wake up on the sleep. I mean, I'm talking like they said, there's almost no toilet facilities. You're on the rocks on a mat in a sleeping bag. You can sleep outside if it's not raining, and if it's raining, there's a stone kind of, I don't know, gatehousey structure on the wall, and you go inside that and just huddle.
sounds cool. I'd love my trip to the Great Wall when I was there.
Did you get to sleep on it?
No, I didn't get to sleep on it.
So my question is, how many people were on the wall during the day? Was it really busy?
It was quite busy, yeah. I mean, obviously the attrition as you get up higher in this, at least in the section I was, I don't even know exactly what section it was, but you get up close to the top, most people drop out. So it becomes, you know, fewer and fewer people as you climb towards the top of the wall. But quite a few people. And that was also where I was really amazed, where everyone wanted to have their picture taken with me. Which I just found astounding. But apparently what is, a lot of the people come from smaller cities and so forth within China, and kind of the first Anglo they've seen or want to hang out with or something like that. So it was really interesting. You stopped every 10 to 15 steps and then want to have your picture taken with a bunch of 16 to 25-year-old girls.
Well, see, now, I think that's something that you may have experienced. I doubt I will experience that.
No, I think you will.
No, I don't think I will, actually. But hey, the thing, one of the reasons that we were really keen to do this is we want to photograph the Great Wall without anyone on it.
Yeah.
And
you can do that in the morning, huh?
Yeah, because apparently at dawn, there's hardly anyone there.
Yeah.
And we're going to do some techniques for removing people, you know, like median filter stuff on.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That'll be fun. No, fantastic. Well, that sounds brilliant, actually. A good mix and a good use of the time when in Beijing.
Should be good.
That'll be fun. So we had our first job here this week. Sorry, changing the subject. Because we had our first finishing job. It was good. It was good. Found a couple bugs in the new 8600 workstation. Some age video problems, actually.
Wow.
Black and white together sometimes doesn't make it happy. And, you know, that never happens, of course.
Not sort of thing that happened for a Disney logo.
Yeah, we just happen to have black letterbox and white type. Apparently a fix is in the mix. The answer, one of the answers, and I guess I have no problem saying this, one of the answers from support was just soften it a little bit. We're like, okay. You've obviously never worked on a commercial with serious deadlines and serious clients before. So anyway, but apparently a test is on the way. But again, that's one of the things when you kind of knew that going into it. If you're going to buy a system, if you're going to pick it up within, you know, the first couple weeks of shipping, they test it behind the scenes a lot, but there's no way you're going to really, you know, there are going to be some bugs and so forth in the system. And actually Autodesk has been really good at trying to accelerate on a firmware fix from the AJA people to get that fixed. Mm. But other than that, no, it went fantastic. It was good. There were, actually there was a lots of fixes that needed to be done that were unforeseen before bid. So, good overages on the job. No, it was really good. The clients were extremely happy. The technical, apart from that minor thing that happened, it really didn't actually impact us in the end. Just use the other flame to lay off, so it was not a problem at all. And it went well. So it's always a bit intimidating going through the first job. I know that now, but going through the first job at a facility, you've got everything, you've done your tests, done your layoffs, done everything to make sure everything's working correctly. But until you have someone behind you with things that you need to do or asking you to do things like dubs, convert them in a certain way, lay them off, label them, enter them in the database, it's really the only way that you know for sure that things are working correctly. And it actually did work out really smashingly. So happy for the guys here.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah, really. It was a little bit of stress, of course, just making sure everything was good, but it was fine. So lots of glad that worked out for everyone. So that's been fun. And even had a little party on Thursday night, thanking some people who helped us get things set up, you know, the realtor, some of the vendors and so forth, have things come out. After which we worked until 4 in the morning doing some of the fixes and so forth, but it still was a lot of fun. I'm like, why did I sign up for this? But anyway, anyway, it was good. All good.
Yes. Excellent. Well, that's really good.
I can't wait till you come here to check it out.
Yeah, exactly. When am I coming?
Do we know? Well, you know what? You will be so happy to hear this. And I don't know if you know this. I'm sure you don't know this. The friends in Japan know this, but the Chicago Cubs are doing really well. They have the best record in baseball right now, or in the National League, I think. They have the best record amongst five teams, I'll just say. They're doing really well. But they are going to be in town. So, my friend, you will be able to experience a summer baseball game, a professional sports event in the United States in Chicago at Wrigley Field. Like, it's a classic old stadium. You know, you've seen it in The Natural. I'm sure you've seen a lot of movies where they've used Wrigley Field. But it's a really an amazing place when you come here. The idea being that Mike's going to be coming to the States around Seagraph time to go to Seagraph, but also drop by Chicago and maybe some other locations. So yes, things are looking rosy from that standpoint.
Excellent.
You're gonna
excellent.
Love it. And even Mr. Huser may be joining us as well. So, cause you know, the guy cannot, he cannot give up a day at Wrigley or at Seagraph this year. He really wanted to do Seagraph last year and hopefully he'll be able to hang out there as well.
I've actually been Twittering the odd cool thing I've seen coming up at the Seagraph conference. There's a ton of stuff to be looking forward to. I have this phenomenon I call the brick wall phenomenon. Have I told you about the brick wall phenomenon?
What is that? Probably, but
I have this thing where I'm running really fast to get everything done, and I see a brick wall coming in front of me, which is the next major obstacle I have to get over.
Yeah.
And the trouble with a big brick wall is it's really hard to see past it until you get over it. So do you know what I mean? Like, I was going to New Zealand, it was like the number one thing in my radar, right? And it was the blip so big on the screen, I couldn't see beyond it. And so I kind of know that I have to get my act together or I'm going to hit the brick wall and it's going to hurt, right?
Right, yeah, totally.
And so as soon as I got over that, I can see the next one. And I go, oh, well, I should have spent more time thinking about that. And I thought, well, actually, you know what? Had I spent more time thinking about the one three down the road, I wouldn't have got past the first one. So I live in the brick world phenomenon where once it gets, you know, clear between me and the next brick wall, it gets my undivided attention. But unfortunately, that means that three brick walls down the road. So I haven't really gone into full Seagraph planning thinking mode yet. And I guess I should, but I've got, you know.
That's where I come in. I've got that. I'll get all the schedules done and stuff like that. Well, then you have the brick walls that are magically appear out of nowhere, like, you know, people who hack into websites.
Those are potholes between you and the brick wall.
I don't know. Well, These are potholes, and these are more like cavernous.
They're booby traps.
Booby, yes.
like the guy who, you know, digs the hole and covers it with just bits of leaves and stuff, so you fall into it if you're not paying attention. I think I'm stretching this analogy to breaking point.
Or, you know, yeah, I was thinking, yeah, take a big bucket of oil and throw it on the ground as you're running towards the brick wall, and so you slip and fall. That's basically what I've been running into the last couple of days. I'm like, geez, man. Yeah. Look at these people. I'm referring to just people hacking into websites and so forth.
Hackers. You know what? I get that it's like the you against the man. It's just that when you happen to be the man and you don't really feel like the man, you just feel like a person that's putting a lot of their free time into putting stuff out for the community, then, you know, fingering it to the man somehow seems less interesting.
No, I know. I just, yeah, yeah. Why don't you pick on the big man?
Yeah, you pick on somebody that's, you know...
worth picking on.
Evil. Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. So, yeah, all good. But yes, SIGGRAPH, it should be fun this year. And again, some of the postgrads have already asked if we're going to be needing help there. We will definitely be doing some FX Guide TV there. It's just whether question of whether we're going to be doing the full netcasts a day, or whether we'll be shooting stuff for later use and rolling it out over the following months or whatever. That's kind of up in the air right now. So we'll be needing
some help. Tell us what you want. Tell us what you want, guys. Post in the forums and tell us what you want from our coverage of SIGGRAPH.
Yeah, definitely.
Somebody said to me the other day that they wanted something, and I was like, hey, we can do that. We'll add that into the thing. And they're like, whoa, I just asked for something and you just added it on the spot. And I was like, well, I'm sure John would agree and we can accommodate that.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, I'm going to really have to be careful about what I ask for. So I think there's an old Chinese adage about that.
Yes. So again, we'll be out there. We'll be, again, needing some help. It just depends how much help and so forth. So, and, you know, maybe even, should we do some kind of meetup out there for the people who are there?
Well, I think so, as long as it involves, if Jeff's coming, I think that we try and stop it.
It's Jeff's hometown, so we're going to make him... Definitely.
I have been at parties, guys, that it was, you know, it was all right. But you know how the party just doesn't have a vibe? The door is open. In has walked Jeff with entourage, and the party went from like a 5 to like an 11 within like him stepping through the door and just doing his stuff. The whole room just
the
came alive, and
does.
It turned into a really cool party.
Yeah. Yeah.
The guy is a force of nature when it comes to just, you know what? Being responsible, I think, but just having a good time and just being, I don't know, kind of up with life.
Yes, yes.
We like him.
Yes, definitely.
Good if we did after all these years.
Yes. I'm going to take him up next year. I think I should go to Jazz Fest after NAB. He's living the high life. Because the man knows how to enjoy.
In LA, can we go and see that... is it the Disney Concert Hall? Is that anywhere near where the convention center is? I haven't seen that thing yet. You know, the amazing architectural thing?
Yeah, it's down there. I think it's down there in that part of town, I think.
I've been to downtown LA, but I would love to go and do some photography down there.
God, I'm thinking, did I shoot in front of it? Oh, my God, I can't remember. I did a spot in the convention center. The LA Convention Center is used for tons of commercials, and so I've done a car commercial. We used it as an airport terminal one time, and I think it's right near the convention center. Or maybe I'm thinking 24.
I thought
24.
It was, but you're wrong.
Yeah, and actually you should check out the... He also did a band shell here on the lakefront here in town that we'll probably check out when you're here as well. Like an open... like a band shell, you know what I mean? One of those half-open things.
Bandstand? With
a band, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's outside.
Gazebo?
It's got... No, it's not a gazebo. What is it? It's like a quarter of... It's just an outdoor stage that's kind of spherical on the back. God, I'm such an... I'm having a tough time with my vocabulary today. I'm having a tough time with my grasp of the English language today. But yeah, he designed one here as well. So, and then I'll also show you the giant hole in the ground for the Chicago Spire. You know, because I'm sure after doing the article and talking to Sheen about that you'll want to see that.
Yeah,
I hope it gets made. Because, as you know, the real estate market here in the States is not that great, so it's a little in doubt whether that's actually going to be, whether that's made. Yeah, but I thought just because, I say that only because of the article on FX Guide that
speaking
that
of that, if you don't understand the subprime mortgage disaster, just listen to the, This American Life from like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, wasn't that just...
I mean, those guys aren't going to Peabody for that. I mean,
this is on, for those of you who don't know, this is on, it's now available on iTunes. podcasts, actually. It's a podcast that's put out by NPR. I believe it's listed under NPR, isn't it? Or something similar.
But just do a search for
American Life.
And the title of the show was 355, The Giant Pool of Money.
Yeah.
And if you want to understand the housing crisis and what happened to our economies, it is, you know, it sounds like a boring subject, but speaking from a PhD point of view, if you want to see a classic piece of being able to target, to explain to an audience without patronizing, without dumbing it down, an incredibly complex subject, this is like a class in journalism for in-depth reporting without losing your audience. It's it just doesn't get much better than that, I reckon, in terms of podcasts.
No, and just in general, very good storytelling podcast. You can learn a lot from listening to it. In the way, and he's got a show on Showtime, which can you get that on your iTunes? Can you download the video show on?
Because I got nominated for an Emmy, I get sent a lot of stuff.
You got that stuff, but is it available on the Australia iTunes store or not?
No,
it's not. All right. So anyway,
being a member of the Academy, I get sent a lot of stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. I was just thinking for people who are out there listening and might be able to check out the TV show who weren't based in the States.
But and the great thing is, obviously, that This American Life podcast is available to anyone globally.
Yes.
It's free and it's good. And
I think it's better from a – I don't know why I like that, but I just think – I think going back to what you were talking about before, the idea of having him talking to you as an individual is really compelling in the audio storytelling medium. So,
and if you really enjoy those podcasts on YouTube – and I posted this in my Twitter feed he has four interviews segments of him discussing how they put a show together and how to develop the skills for doing that kind of work. And, I've said before, to quote someone off his show, I drink his bathwater, right? I mean, Ira Garst is just a legend in terms of interviewing, in terms of technique, in terms of just narrative sort of journalism. That just doesn't get any better.
No, and if you didn't see that link, we'll post it. But also, if you just go to youtube.com and search for Ira Glass, IraGlass, his storytelling things come up within the first five hits of it. So you can check it out. It's a shame. Mike and I were joking that we were talking. It would be good to run into him here in Chicago, but he spends his time in New York now. So
in New York, really?
Yeah.
Because I'd love to interview him.
Yeah.
I gotta go, but
yeah, me too.
It's been really great.
It's been good, enjoyable, and again,
just one thing, because I don't want to do the whole thing, but just if people are interested, when we talk about our Twitter feeds, John and I do not post stuff on what we had for lunch,
especially
and,
John.
Yeah, no, we just don't. Right?
Very often.
I tend to post things that are either flagging key things that I've seen that I think are significant. Or alternatively, just letting people know stuff that we've been interviewing and interviews that are coming up. It's kind of like a behind-the-scenes peek at what's happening. You know, if I've just had an interview with somebody, then like the author of Droidworks I interviewed yesterday, then I will Twitter that, and then you can kind of get an idea what's coming up down the pipe. We don't subscribe to the kind of, you know, I'm just having a latte now.
Yes, exactly. And I'll vouch for Mike saying that because I follow Mike and people who abuse the Twitter I don't follow.
So I did the same thing. Yeah, somebody started talking about regularly about their child and what their child was doing, and I was like, no offense, I don't have the bandwidth to deal with that kind of chatter.
Exactly. And my joking comment about me is that I don't post that much, so actually when I do, it's definitely related to that.
You know how it says, what are you doing now? I read that comment as, what is everybody talking about now? Do you know what I mean? Like, I walk into a room of us, people like us, and you would say, what are we all chatting about? You know, what's everyone talking about? That's the tone I take, as opposed to, because I would not walk into a room of us, like you, Jeff, the profs, and say, I just have a latte. Standing in the queue for the latte, I had, you know, noticed that cups are getting smaller.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would happily walk into a room and say, man, just had this amazing interview with the guy who interviewed Lucas and wrote Droidworks, and that's going to be posted in a week or two. And then someone hopefully would say, oh, that's cool, I'll keep an eye out for it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think Twitter has kind of matured that way, I think, in a way, because it really did used to be worse, or maybe just the people I'm following are better at and not abusing it, or learning from what it's useful for and how to use it, I guess, in a way to inform So I found it really interesting from that standpoint. It's a good way to pick out just little things that you might not have noticed otherwise and so forth. And mine is, yours is, what's your login?
/MikeSeymour
/MikeSeymour
And so, I think mine is twitter.com/MikeSeymour
I think mine is John Mont FX.
Yeah, yours is John Mont FX. I know that because I follow you.
Sorry. Well, it's one of those things I don't remember because I don't log in, right? It's one of those things. Yeah. My preferences are saved. So, but again, yes, follow that. That's on Twitter. Well, that's good. All right, my friend, I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to still got a little bit more work to do and get things set up. I'm trying to roll out the exams early next week and going to record a video for you and the other profs to show us what's kind of going on behind the scenes with that. So look for that next week, guys. And thanks for listening.
See you guys. Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.